Hi, welcome to Forensic Forecast. It's been a few weeks again, mostly because I've been away on vacation, but, you know, good for me.
Yeah.
How are you doing, Simon?
I'm doing all right.
Good. What have you done over the last few weeks?
Well, I've actually managed to fit in some time off as well and go and wander around Paris.
How was that?
It was all right.
Yeah.
We're not really city people, so we go to these places to see the sights and then just think, well, it's noisy and busy and, yeah. And, well, not too... I'm not going to go as far as saying... no, never mind.
Simon's tagline on Google Talk says...
Oh, well, there you go, got me in it.
Paris would be fantastic if it wasn't for the French or something like that.
Well, I think that's possibly a slight misquote.
Well, slight. The sentiment is probably the same, though.
It's probably pretty much there, yeah.
So let's start off with another apology then, shall we?
Look, how about an explanation? Is it? It's more to do with the cultural differences, really, I think, and the way that British approach things compared to, well, I guess, mainland Europeans. There's a different attitude for different things.
Wait just a second. Right, that was beginning to sound a bit like cyber speak. I just had to fix something. go on, Simon.
All right. It's just that British generally, there's a joke amongst people in Europe that whenever there's a couple of people stood somewhere, that the British will go and join the queue at the end, whereas that's not necessarily the culture of other places, and just loads of little things, really. But the French were generally quite polite and willing to speak English and things, so I was quite impressed for the most part.
Yeah. Oh, good stuff. Yeah, I spent most of the last few weeks in southern Utah with my wife and her family. That was an enjoyable experience, and we hope to be going back there very, very shortly. But, yeah, it's a lot gloomier back here in England than it is over there. The weather was like 90 to 95 degrees while we were there and came back with a tan. And, you know, come back to England, and what a depressing place it is weather-wise. Walk off the plane and you want to shoot yourself. Fantastic.
Yeah. On coming back to England, even from just being away for like 4 days and only being in Paris, which is a 40-minute flight away, you just come back and you think, why do so many people hang around here?
Oh, it's for the high wages, the low taxes, and the beautiful weather, Simon. That's exactly why people hang around in England. Yeah, brilliant it is. Fantastic. Anyway, I'm sure we're boring people, and I wish they've. I'm sure they wish that we'd sped up this bit as well. We need to get on with some news. There's a little bit, not a great deal, but the first thing I want to talk about is that those of you who follow me on Twitter will have seen. Over the last few hours, that I tweeted something about Guidance laying off 7.5% of their employees. Now, people might wonder where I've got this from. I was listening to the Q1, the first quarter results, which Guidance do every quarter, obviously. And this year... the start of this year, they're down, according to their own calculations, $3.2 million on last year, which is quite a large hit, really. And it appears as if in order to compensate that, what they've done is that they've decided that they have 412 employees and they're going to cut 7.5% of the people employed. But those jobs... aren't going to come from sales people or product development. So, Simon, where are they going to come from if they don't come from those two areas?
Well, that probably leaves, well, as far as I can tell, only a couple of groups of people, which are the people responsible for training and management.
And administration and stuff like that as well.
Yeah, administration.
So, yesterday, I was watching the soccer on TV. Man United won again to the final. Fantastic. But yeah. And Alicia got a message popped up from our friends in California, and our friends, my friend who works for Guidance is Larry Sewell, and he's been there for several years. I think probably it's got to be over 10 years that he's been there. And the email just said that Larry had been laid off. And I thought, that's incredible to me. That's just astonishing, because he's been there for so long. He's, like, responsible for training in various parts of the world and stuff like that, and they've just got rid of him. And I just, I couldn't believe it. And when I started to listen to the Q1 report today, I know, you know, as soon as they said, you know, we're reducing our headcount by 7.5%, I just thought, wow, that's a lot. Now, what they've said, bearing in mind they're down 3.2 million, they said what's going to happen is that cutting out these 7.5% of employees will save them $3 million over the coming year, with only an initial payout, which will affect their second quarter profits by $300,000. So they're going to take a short-term hit, but a long-term gain on this. But you have to ask, if they're getting rid of people who provide the training for the products, is that ever going to be a long-term gain?
You wouldn't have thought so. You'd expect a lot of revenue to come from training, and the training courses are generally fairly well attended, and the more staff you get rid of for training, the less training you can do, and everything else kind of starts going down from that.
Well, obviously people aren't going to buy the product if they can't get trained on how to use it, or if they don't know how to use it. So, I mean, that to me is just... No, obviously they've got to cut costs somewhere, but it appears to me as if various other entities within Guidance are doing poorer jobs than the training staff, really. But I just want to say, you know, Larry Sewell, he's the reason I got into digital forensics in the first place. He spoke highly of it and recommended it as a career, and I took his advice, and I'm forever grateful for that. And I wish him all the best and all the luck in finding a new job. Now, if anybody here is listening in California, you know, feel free to contact us, and we'll try and get Larry hooked up with some other employment, because I think it's just terrible the way he's been treated. But it's just one of those things, isn't it? Unfortunately, it's...
Well, I guess a lot of people think that computer forensics and the whole scene of digital forensics is probably going to be least affected by the various things going on financially around the world, but obviously that's not the case.
Well, you see, I'm going to disagree with you, because we still don't see a slowdown, do we, at all? In fact, what we see is progression and expansion, especially the company that we work for. But I'm sure it's the same across the board. I've not heard of anybody really experiencing any difficulties. Now, the reason I think that that Guidance have made these cutbacks is because you've got the governments dishing out more money to, you know, rescue the banks or car manufacturers or whoever else. And in the meantime, they have to get that money, have to take that money from somewhere else. Therefore, contracts with other people, which are training contracts, software contracts, are going to take a hit. So Guidance, obviously, are going to make less money from the government. And the government, let's face it, are where Guidance make a great deal of their money. Now, obviously, I'm not going to go talk about NKS Enterprise. That's the real moneymaker for them. As far as training goes, most of the revenue for that comes from the government, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And I just, that's where the slowdown is. The slowdown isn't in the private sector. for digital forensics. It's in government spending.
No, but there's other things to consider as well. The fact that companies who may be looking to get into set up a forensic department or whatever, and people who are looking at software might look past the big players for forensic software and look more towards things that they consider to be more affordable. So it could well still have an impact more for the makers of forensic software than for forensic investigators.
Well, yeah, but the field as a whole isn't slowing down. Just because guidance experience some difficulty doesn't mean that anybody else is experiencing difficulty. You know what I mean? It's just,
yeah.
It's still a sad day, and we don't like. It's unfortunate that people have to lose jobs. And all I can do is, if anybody's listening to this who is going through that kind of thing, then, you know, I think that the forensic community as a whole is a fantastic little community, and as long as you show that you are capable in what you do, then people make sure you're looked after and you have a job to go to.
Yeah.
So, well, best of luck to anybody who finds themselves in that situation, and hopefully that will be limited to a small number as possible. So,
yeah,
I think that's the most somber that we've ever been on this, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, we need to do something cheery now.
Yeah. Well, let's all laugh at the police in the UK then, shall we?
That's possibly not what I meant by being cheery, but...
well...
I guess we'll go with it.
Yeah. Apparently, the Association of Chief Police Officers, which everybody probably knows as ACPO, is working with the Attorney General's Office in the UK on what changes to data law would be needed to allow the new Metropolitan Police E-Crime Unit, or PCEU, to gather intelligence from around the country. What they're proposing to do is they want to set up a central office where they have lots of forensic investigators. This is from what I derive from the article on the Register. And that what they want to do is that they want to connect to other high-tech crime units around the country and do the analysis all at this central e-crime unit. I mean, that's the feeling I get from reading this article. And I think it's certainly an interesting thing to try and do. But there's a few little flaws in this, isn't there, Simon?
Well, yeah, to put it bluntly. It's any time you put anything like this on a kind of remote connection at somewhere where it can be accessed remotely, you've got to think to yourself, security, haven't you? And the fact that you can never really guarantee security for anything that's connected to the internet or anything along those lines. And you just wonder what are the plans underneath the surface of this? Are they planning on having it connected to infrastructure that already exists, or are they planning on essentially creating their own kind of mini police internet that's not part of the system that's used by everyone else?
Well, the head of the PCEU, his name is Detective Superintendent Charlie McMurdy, and he says that there's most police forces in the country have 18 to 20 more months of backlog, which could be quite a lot. 2 years could be a long time for people to find out that they're not guilty of anything. Mm-hmm. And he says that this will help to speed up the process. There's 20 full-time investigators at PCEU who will just rattle through everything and they'll be able to gather more intelligence on the online fraud and stuff like that. Now, the funny thing is that he talks about that and says this is ideally what we should be doing, and then at the same time he says we need money and help from the industry because we only have PCEU only has 3.5 million in funding from the Home Office over the next 2.5 years. So if they were going to connect all the high-tech crime units and PCEU, I'm telling you what, it's not going to be with the new infrastructure model. They're going to work on existing infrastructure, which yeah. means they're going to be sending evidence over the internet.
Yeah, which seems like an interesting idea, considering anyone who wants to... Well, he wants to go for an outsourcing contract for a high-tech crime unit. They have certain requirements, and one of which is to have a network that's completely self-contained and not connected to any outside sources,
yes,
including the internet. And so for them to say, okay, well, we'll just use the internet to do this, you just think, well, isn't that what you've decided not to do up until now?
It's. I honestly think that there's somebody somewhere who makes up all these things for the police. You know, I mean, last time we spoke or the time before, where they were saying that the police want to hack into people's computers and business computers just to make sure, you know, to see if there's any suspect activity going on.
Yeah, well, this is all kind of going along the same lines. It's I think these are all coming from... I think these ideas, essentially, are coming from the same hat, really. I think someone's thinking, this is an idea.
These are stupid ideas. What do they think they're going to achieve?
Well, you've got to bear in mind as well that security of government agencies all around, without even you going as far as the internet, isn't great. Given that every few weeks there's an unencrypted disk containing some confidential information somewhere going missing, or something crazy like that going on, you just think, if they can't protect a disk, how are they going to protect evidence files over the internet?
No. Well, exactly. And especially if they've only got £3.5 million in funding. Obviously, £3.5 million over 2.5 years is not a lot of money. If you say they have those 20 investigators, and then they have management as well. So you're talking 25 employees. And you're talking about all the forensic equipment for them, mm-hmm. and all the other bits and pieces thrown in. £3.5 million is going to get eaten up very, very quickly, and you can guarantee that the police don't have permanent people in place who just do network security and who know and understand about point-to-point encryption and stuff like that. Yep. You have to really wonder, do they just say these things and then like, oh well, hopefully we'll figure out a way to do it, or do they just say, oh, we'd like to do this, and then just say, well, but we can't really, but at least we have good intentions?
Well, the thing that puzzles me is you look at the introduction to the article and it's talking about the backlog that police forces on average have. And it's almost as if they think that doing this and employing 20 people to work remotely can make a dent in someone's backlog.
I know what you mean. All these high-tech crime units have employed lots of people who do investigations. Obviously not all of them have lots of people, but there are a large number of them. And then they also outsource work to companies such as ourselves. Now, that, to me, it shows that they're struggling to cope anyway. And 20 people for up to two years' worth of backlog. For how many forces does it say in the country? 43 different police forces. So 2 years for 43 police forces around the country.
I tell you what, they've got to have some amazingly fast computers.
So what, if they're doing two or three computer jobs a day, it'll take them probably the rest of their natural lives to accomplish. Because that backlog's going to keep slipping as well. The backlog is caused because of increased drive sizes and increased quantities of media that people keep at their homes, the complications of new operating systems and all kinds of stuff. Whereas you could spend, you know, a couple of days doing an investigation in the past, you can't do that anymore. The investigation times are stretching out.
Yeah.
So, best of freaking luck to them. I don't think so, somehow. I think they're really spouting off more rubbish and don't really know what they're talking about, which is quite a shame, really, because it makes them look silly, and people won't take them seriously.
Well, if it's done properly and it's done with the right kind of budget in mind, it could potentially work. But the funding for that would be astronomical.
Well, yeah, and you'd have to employ somebody, a team full time, to work on the network encryption and all kinds of stuff.
And yeah.
That network would get attacked so much, it's unrealistic. If they're transferring real data from real suspects' computers, they're going to really struggle.
Well, it's possible they could plan on doing things with about three different forms of encryption without... and you could encrypt evidence files, you could put them in something else and encrypt that and send them over an encrypted internet connection or something, but it's still... There's always a doubt there. There's always a doubt when it comes to security of things on the internet.
Yeah. It's... Well, you know, maybe what they'll do is that they'll disband PCEU and come up with another... acronymed cyber investigation force or something, like they do every couple of years. I wonder if I took bets on how long PCEU would last, would be around for. I wonder if it'll actually make it to 2.5 year mark, or if it'll stop before then. I don't get it. I don't understand why they say these things.
They just seem like ideas that aren't really thought all the way out, and it's like someone's thinking out loud.
Yep.
Or doing like a public brainstorming session.
Yep.
Or something. Although technically I guess to be politically correct I shouldn't use brainstorming, should I? I should use, what is it? Thought shower or?
Yep. Thought shower's the new one for us now. To be politically correct. But anyway, if anybody here is listening from Virginia, be worried, be very, very worried, because people may remember a few years ago such a thing as ransomware. You ever heard of that term before, Simon?
I have, yeah.
Would you like to explain a little bit about what ransomware is?
Like always, malware is essentially something that's put out there to harm and infect machines, and I guess ransomware's probably under that umbrella. And it's the idea of infecting someone's machine and essentially taking control of it and popping up a little message saying, you can have your machine or your files back or whatever if you send this much money to this place.
So... lots of people fell victim to this a few years ago, where they didn't keep their own backups or anything like that. Everything they had was just stored on their computer. You know, the wedding pictures, picture of the children, personal information, you name it. You know, somebody could run some program on your computer which would allow them to get access to it. They would wipe the original and create just this big container, encrypted container, in which they'd stick all your private documents. And it looks as if someone's tried to resurrect this and have been quite successful in doing so. As some, I hate this phrase, hackers have managed to get 8.3 million patient records from a Virginia government website and are holding it ransom for $10 million.
I think that's a lot. It's a lot to ask for something like that.
Yeah. I mean, it wouldn't be so bad, right? Because you would think, hey, you know, government facility, government website, what they'll do is that they'll go to their backups and they'll just restore it. Now, these records, they track prescription drugs, you know, 8.2 million patient records, total of 35 million prescriptions. And there's no backups. So this guy's gone in, he's deleted all the original data, he's created this encrypted volume, and he stuck all the stuff inside and said, if you want this, $10 million. And I don't get it. Why don't people learn? I mean, this is a government website. They should have backup procedures.
Yeah.
How do they not get this? How many more times does something like this have to happen before somebody actually gets a clue?
Well, this is the thing. Backups are expensive. They take time to do. They're basically a pain in the neck, and some people just seem to think, oh, we can get away with not having them.
But how long did it take to accumulate all these, you know, 8.3 million patient records? This must have taken a fair amount of time.
Yeah, and it's not an overnight thing, is it?
No, they've not performed any backups on that. You can understand somebody getting lazy and not doing a backup, you know, once every so many days. But we're talking about several years without doing any kind of backup, really, aren't we here?
Yeah. That's anything else other than laziness as far as the IT administration goes, really.
Yeah. Or maybe they don't have sufficient budget or something.
Maybe.
Maybe they only have $3.5 million to spend over 2.5 years. But this.
Yeah, let's stop flogging that horse. Move on.
this person who broke into this website and took the data said that if people didn't respond in a week's time, the data would be made available to whoever came with the highest bid.
Yeah.
So
it's crazy when you think about it, isn't it? Because, yes, backups are a pain in the neck. They're expensive. They're everything else. But they're far less expensive than whatever ransom someone's going to decide or someone's going to want to pay out.
It's... Oh, dear. I think we're seeing a steady decline of smart people in the world, and...
You think it's a steady decline, do you?
Well, it was a steady decline. It's becoming more and more rapid. Now, no one has responded to this yet, and... The other thing which it does is that it knocks President Obama around quite a lot, because obviously he's trying to push socialized healthcare and sharing of medical records and everything like that. Now, I've got a feeling that 8.3 million people in Virginia are going to say, we don't like this idea, because obviously it doesn't work.
Well, sharing records is one thing, I think... Someone just taking them for themselves is another, but people won't necessarily make the distinction.
Yeah, there was a previous case similar to this, where somebody offered a $1 million bounty for information leading to the arrest of the blackmailer. But I don't believe anybody was ever found for that. Now, unfortunately, encryption and the passwords and everything else are becoming more and more advanced. If this guy has used something a bit like TrueCrypt and has entered like a humongous long key for the encryption, then they can pretty much they can pay the money and get the data back, or they can spend the next 5 million years trying to crack the data.
Yep.
So, what are their options? What do they do? What would you do?
I really don't know. I think it's essentially a lose-lose situation, really.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's much of a bright side in it.
No. I don't think you can justify paying it. No. I would recommend highly against paying it, because it's like a kidnapping case, you know. If you pay out, then people are more inclined to try again in future.
Yeah, you're going to set a precedent doing something like that.
But I hope that this is a lesson, because if these people take this hit on this, then they're going to have to take the hit, stand up again, and improve their protocols and do some backing up. And I hope it's a lesson to everybody else out there that, you know, keep backups and keep them somewhere where they can't be touched by somebody hacking into your system. It's no good having a backup on a different drive, you know, or in a tape which is sitting inside the server at the time the guy gets access to your machine.
Yeah.
Just proper the other thing procedures.
Along those lines is making sure that you have data that is useful in a place at a given time rather than everything. Because if there's data sat around that's not being used and someone manages to get access and they've got a lot more to go at. So it's an idea of making sure that you don't flood your system with a lot of information that someone else could find useful but you don't necessarily need at the time.
Yeah, so just compartmentalize it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Also, don't put stuff on USB drives or CDs and then take them out of the office either.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, we're seeing more and more stuff of data compromises, and it's terrible. It shouldn't be happening. We should be smart enough to cope with this.
Yeah.
And we're just not. And, you know, forensics can only take you so far. I mean, if this guy has gone in, or this girl has gone in, and they've bounced off several different servers from all around the world, they're not going to get caught. The forensics can only get you so far. But I think that it's just, all you can do is just learn from it and go no further.
Yep.
We've been really depressing today.
I know.
It's the effect, must be the effects of the vacations, really.
Yeah, the fact that we've gone on a vacation and come back and returned to normal life, I think.
Yeah.
That's the problem with vacations, is you've actually got to come home again.
And cope with reality.
Yeah.
Yeah, you get home and then you open your door after being away for so long and you see the big pile of bills that have been posted through the door. And you think, joy.
Having said that, I did read today about a British guy who got a dream job working as a caretaker on what's essentially a desert island.
Yep.
So, going on holiday is probably a bit of a bummer for him.
Yeah. He gets paid £70,000 to sit on this island where he can play volleyball or, you know, go swimming, do whatever he pleases. He gets paid £70,000 for that, which is, I don't know, what, just over $100,000 or something? And all he has to do is just blog about it every week and just say what he's done.
You know what? Never has the phrase "I hate that guy" been more appropriate, I think, than when discussing the person who got that job.
No, and I'd never heard of him before. There was like TV reporters and, you know, journalists and all kind of stuff going in for that. And I don't know if you've ever seen Geek Brief TV before, but the host of that, Callie Lewis, went in for it as well, and she didn't get it. And I thought, well, if anybody's going to get the support of the public, it was probably going to be her. But somehow this guy managed to get voted in, and he was eventually chosen. Who is he? I've never heard of this guy before.
It was a vote system, was it?
Well, for like, originally there was like a web poll set up for people to get nominated and voted on and stuff like that. And I think it got down to like the last 20. And then the last 20 were all taken out to Australia, where the final decision was made. Mm. So, yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, but you think about his holidays, and his holidays are going to consist of coming back and visiting family in the UK.
I don't think he'll bother. I wouldn't. No offence.
I completely understand. It would be the same the other way around.
Yep. If only we could all have an enjoyable job like that.
Yeah. Why would you want to take a holiday to somewhere like the UK when you can just get on Skype?
I can dream. One day. All right, so let's have an interesting and funny story from you, Simon.
Okay. Of all the things where you could be asked for proof of ID, I think I have one that really takes the cake and is possibly the more ridiculous one you could possibly think of. You could name any item you could buy at an Asda store in England, which Asda are owned by Walmart. They're not quite the same thing, but it's a supermarket.
Close enough.
Anyway. Yeah, so a supermarket, you get your groceries there, you can buy utensils, household things. And so of all the things you could possibly buy in Asda, some of the most harmless things you'd think you could come out with are a set of teaspoons. And yet, someone who bought a set of teaspoons, I'm trying to find a name, I can't find it, Asda store in Halifax, was told by the shop assistant she needed to provide proof of ID when she got to the counter. And this shop assistant was possibly a little bit taken aback by the request from the till system for ID. But she went along with it and said that someone had once been murdered with a teaspoon and therefore age identification was now required. the receipt's been published online at the website nannyknowsbest.blogspot.com, which apparently is aimed at bringing down the nanny state that's, in some people's opinion, corroding the heart of Britain, which is possibly a bit extreme. Peter McCarthy, the manager of the store, said that he wasn't aware of the spoon ID rule. He said the customer will have been asked for age identification by the assistant when prompted by the till. I'm not aware of an age restriction for spoons. It's most likely a mix-up with the barcodes.
Superb.
So
I feel like going to Asda now and buying teaspoons just to see if I have to provide age verification.
You could do a test with it, couldn't you? You could buy a set of carving knives and a set of spoons and see which one they ask for ID for. I bet it's the wrong one.
Oh, absolutely. Superb.
The wonders of modern technology, eh?
Brilliant. Oh dear, oh dear. And as if
that was in an area where there's a one of the police forces we use, actually.
Yeah, well, it's in Yorkshire. Halifax is in Yorkshire, and I can't say any more about that. I'll get in trouble. It's like Simon and the French.
Yeah, but I was just thinking about that because we get certain things from from that part of the country. I'm just wondering if we're going to get people's mobile phones sent through for examination because they've tried to buy spoons without ID or something.
Oh, come on. This is getting worse. Okay. I think we'll wrap it up there. I think we've probably got on people's nerves enough now. Just a couple of quick things. Is that, first of all, sometime over the next couple of weeks, Simon and I are going to do a little experiment as far as blocking out antenna signals from phones and Wi-Fi and stuff like that goes. I'm going to try and create our own Faraday tent and see if that's more effective or less effective than other ways of trying to stop signals. And it should be an entertaining thing to do. We're going to make a video of it and post it up for everyone to laugh at and make fun of us for. So,
yeah.
Also, I still want to do an episode that discusses the issue of law enforcement only. And I'm still looking for somebody with a background in law enforcement to come and have a conversation about that. We've got a couple of people who from the private sector who want to talk about it, and so we're just trying to balance out the conversation a bit. We don't want to just make it all one-sided. So any volunteers, then let me know. Usual place is lee@forensicforecast.com. And I think that's about it. I can't think of anything else. Can you, Simon?
Nothing relevant or important, no.
No? We're not going to speed up the podcast anymore.
I think people can understand us fine the way it is.
I had to do it. It was funny. All right. Well, I'll bid you all adieu. And Simon doesn't like that word. But see you later.
Bye.
Bye.